peninsula will be considered when South Korea is increasing weapons exports under the rationale of profit and income.
President Moon Jae-in's trip comes as his single term is set to wrap up in May. However, South Korea's arms industry enjoys broad bipartisan political support. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip came together to highlight the plight of the Palestinian inmates in Israeli jails amid the spread of COVID-19 infection. According to Wa'ad Institute for Palestinian Prisoners Affairs, the virus is significantly on the rise among the inmates, infecting hundreds of Palestinian prisoners who have caught the new coronavirus. The statement indicates that more than 100 of the Palestinians have tested positive. These Palestinians say the spread of the virus among Palestinian inmates is the result of Israel's intentional policy of medical negligence.
Israeli regimes keeps adopting inhumane measures against our prisoners, depriving them of their basic rights. There is a clear intentional medical negligence by Israeli regime that is aimed on putting more pressure on our inmates.
The Palestinians called on the international community and the Red Cross to provide the required medical care for Palestinian inmates and stop the spread of the pandemic in Israeli jails. Palestinian factions in the Gaza Strip say they hold the Israeli regime fully responsible for the lives of the Palestinian inmates, stressing that the prisoners' issue is a top priority and they won't remain silent over these Israeli violations. According to Palestinian authorities, 5,000 Palestinians, including women and minors, are currently held in Israeli jails, with many of them under the so-called administrative policy, which enables Israel to hold them in jail with no charge. The total number of infections among Palestinian inmates has risen rapidly, according to the Prisoners Club statement. Palestinians are calling on the international community to make an action, adding this intentional medical negligence amounts to complicity in the Israeli crimes practiced against Palestinians inside jails. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
In the limelight.
It is past time for President Biden to make good on his commitment to change Washington's Yemen policy. His administration must stop supporting Saudi Arabia's war of aggression and enabling Riyadh's egregious human rights violations. Biden needs to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Ted Galen Carpenter, writer. This article is published under the heading, Biden's Continuing Shameful Policy Regarding Yemen. In his first major foreign policy speech as President, Joe Biden pledged to end U.S. involvement in Yemen's bloody war. Beginning in the summer of 2015, the U.S. actively aided the military intervention by Saudi Arabia and its Persian Gulf allies, especially the United Arab Emirates. The U.S. military refueled coalition warplanes and provided Saudi and UAE forces with intelligence information, thereby assisting those countries with their bombing missions. That collusion became ever more shameful as coalition forces repeatedly struck civilian targets, orchestrated a blockade that created famine conditions, and committed a mounting number of war crimes. A growing chorus of critics pressured both the Obama and Trump administrations to cease abetting the Saudi alliance's ugly conduct, Their efforts had little success, although the Trump administration did finally stop refueling Saudi warplanes. Biden appeared to take a different approach from that of his two predecessors. In his February 2021 speech, he stated that we are stepping up our diplomacy to end the war in Yemen, a war which has created humanitarian and strategic catastrophe. I've asked my Middle East team to ensure our support for the United Nations-led initiative to impose a ceasefire, open humanitarian challenges, and restore long-dormant peace talks. This war has to end, Biden emphasized, adding, and to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales. Such comments were encouraging and seemed to be a refreshing contrast to the U.S. support for Saudi Arabia's position during the Obama and Trump years. But astute observers should have spotted some troubling conditional language in Biden's speech. Directly after Biden's pledge to end U.S. support for offensive operations, Biden stated that at the same time Saudi Arabia faces missile attacks, we are going to continue to support and help Saudi Arabia defend its sovereignty and its territorial integrity and its people. That was a potential loophole large enough that an 18-wheel truck could drive through it, and the potential loophole soon became an actual one. There appeared to be continuing assistance from Washington regarding indisputably offensive coalition operations. The indifference of those forces to civilian casualties from such operations also continued unabated. Nevertheless, in December 2021, the administration pushed another major U.S. arms sales to Saudi Arabia through Congress, despite a strong bipartisan opposition in the Senate led by Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders. The latest sale was a whopping $650 million package, consisting primarily of missiles and missile launchers. A statement from the Pentagon when the administration signed off on the transaction in November deserved a prize for Orwellian cynicism. This proposed sale will support U.S. foreign policy and national security of the U.S. by helping to improve the security of a friendly country that continues to be an important force for political and economic progress in the Middle East, he said. The December deal followed a $500 million helicopter maintenance agreement that the U.S. administration signed in September. So much for reducing Washington's support for the ongoing Saudi-led intervention and helping to bring the tragic conflict in Yemen to an end. Writing in the New Republic in January 2022, Quincy Institute scholar Anil Shaleen condemned the Biden administration's rank hypocrisy. Noting the onset of a new coalition offensive, they charged that this latest round of violence demonstrates that U.S. support continues to embolden the Saudis, the Emiratis, and the Hadi government in exile, perpetuating a war that has already claimed 377,000 Yemeni lives. The Biden administration remained silent on the Saudis' Christmas bombing campaign. The coalition's latest offensive on January 21st should deepen criticism of the Biden administration's policies regarding Yemen. You know me, a columnist, Daniel Larison, notes that this is a picture that we keep waking up to over and over because the coalition governments are never held accountable and pay no penalty for their outrages. They still receive U.S. support and weapons. And they evidently have no need to worry that relations with the U.S. will worsen if they keep pummeling Yemen with U.S.-made weapons. It is past time for President Biden to make good on his commitment to change Washington's Yemen policy. His administration must stop supporting Saudi Arabia's war of aggression and enabling Riyadh's egregious human rights violations. Biden needs to walk the walk, not just talk the talk.
Faqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned.
قرآن کریم به پیغمبر گرامی اسلام می‌فرماید به مسلمان ها بگو لا
Allah in the Holy Quran Surah At-Tawbah Ayah 55 states, So let not their wealth and children impress you. Allah only desires to punish them with these in the life of this world, and that their souls may depart while they are faithless. A true example of such people in this ayah was Walid, the polytheist at the time of Prophet Muhammad. He was mean to an extent that in Surah Mudassir, his thoughts are cursed several times by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He was the person who called Prophet Muhammad a sorcerer. Walid was wealthy and had many sons who were all healthy and helping their father.
قرآن به مسلمان میگه به پیغمبر میفرماید لا تعجب کرد.
However, in Surah Toba, Ayah 55, Allah warns the people not to be impressed by wealth and children of the people like Walid, because this will make them faithless. There are many people like Walid in today's world too, the people who are competing for more money and power, the people who compare themselves with others only in terms of financial and materialistic wealth. The religion of Islam is absolutely against comparison made based on money and wealth. On the contrary, if we compare our conditions with those who are lower than us, we are always thankful to Allah and we never feel poor or needy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRide English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a shorter speech by Hojjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Economic multilateralism and broader relations with the world, particularly neighboring countries, is to be Iran's new foreign policy basis. This is decades on from the early days after the 1979 revolution that sung neither East nor West Islamic Republic. Now, in still talking independence, but with friends East and West, Iran is veering more eastwards. That's after a battered-down JCPOA or 2015 nuclear deal just dragged on as Western parties to the deal stood by to watch Iran commit to that multilateral deal almost unilaterally. Early signs of this policy of strengthening ties with Eastern powers and neighbors surfaced with President Raisi, Iran's new president's visit to Tajikistan. There he initiated the process of Iran's upgrading its observer status with the SCO to permanent member, the SCO being the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It didn't stop there, but carried on into talks with Russia and Saudi Arabia. What was said? To listen in, stay with me, Leila Farahmandzi, on Iran Today, as I focus more on Russia in this episode. Talks with Russia were to prepare for an agreement with that eastern giant, similar to the one Iran signed with China, meaning the 25-year Iran-China Strategic Partnership Agreement. Iran's Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian bore tidings of an imminent implementation of that sweeping economic and security document signed between Iran and China. The document deems China will invest nearly $400 billion in a wide range of projects in Iran in exchange for discounted oil for 2 decades. Mr. Vafai is a Tehran University professor with a new deputyship position at the International Relations Department. He specializes specifically in all matters China, past and present.
Iran and China have had relations with each other, very good ones at that. If you look at the data on Iran's imports from and exports to China, you'll see that China would buy Iranian oil and do projects in the country. Finance was going on too. Apart from the pandemic and Trump's maximum pressure campaign, Iran and China have had normal relations. What's changed is that the ties have taken a strategic angle. Before the agreement, Iran and China have had project-based cooperation. This meant that, for example, a deal would be reached for China to buy a specific amount of oil from Iran for the next 2 years, and then the tankers would go back and forth.
January the 19th heard an interesting exchange between the presidents of Iran and Russia as they sat well apart for COVID concerns during Ibrahim Raisi's visit to Moscow. Raisi reminded Vladimir Putin of how Iran had resisted America for 40 years, and looking at how Russia's own confrontation with America was now deepening, Raisi said it was time to take on the power of the Americans with an increased synergy between our two countries. So, modeled on the 25-year Iran-China document, Iran and Russia now discussed a 20-year agreement between themselves. This deal would focus on technology transfers from Russia and the purchase of Russian military equipment, as well as Russian investment in the Iranian energy infrastructure. Mr. Rezvanpour, PhD, is an analyst specializing in matters Caucasian and Caspian with an interest in all manner of Iranian foreign policy. He joined us at Press TV Studios.
Creating alliance depends on each country's, national agenda, in my opinion. Improving relationships and also in security matters with Russia will just obtain both countries' results. We have seen this cooperation in Syria. Russia has a place to play, in the Middle East, and that was the Syria. So, in my opinion, just signing 20 years contracts with Russia will provide Iran much more economic, advantages rather than security and defense advantages. Because if they improve their relationships, they can count on just, thwarting any plot which is being placed by the Western countries against these two countries.
China is a world economic giant, but Russia remains the military giant of the Eastern Bloc without being an all-consuming Soviet Union anymore. And so Iran opted for Russia over an America that may have attacked Iran after its wars on Afghanistan and Iraq in 2001 and 2003 respectively, that rendered Iranian borders vulnerable. And so 20 years ago, this country came to an understanding with Moscow that Russia would not only not attack Iran, but would not help any attacking force either, nor would it allow others to attack Iran from Russia. Given regional changes 20 years on, however, Iran now presented Russia with a new document as the foundation for rebooted ties between the two states. The discussed 20-year pact between Iran and Russia would boost the trade between the two up to $10 billion, probably with national currency, and this would break the dominance of the dollar.
Iran and Russia need to make a long-term deal without a doubt. There are different reasons warranting a deal, including shared borders, the Caspian Sea, Central Asia, issues related to Afghanistan, and other matters of shared interests. China has recently entered the calculations in West Asia and displayed interest in the region. The visit of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council's foreign ministers to China is another signal showing China's interest in West Asia. Iran must definitely have a long-term plan with such a country.
While energy cooperation MOUs were signed during President Raisi's visit to Moscow, the two countries, Russia and Iran, agreed to identify mutual agricultural capacities for an exchange of agricultural products, and also to activate the North-South transport corridor. Iran's being a major link on that route would make the time and distance much shorter in transiting goods from the northern countries such as Russia to southern countries such as India. Mr. Qahramanpour is a political analyst with a doctorate in political science. He shared his views on Iran's look to the east via Skype.
A renewed emphasis on stability and continuity of close ties between Tehran and Moscow, despite US pressures, is another message of this visit. It shows that despite the differences, especially those in the Caucasus, that led some observers to believe their bilateral ties would suffer, Iran and Russia enjoy close relations. Mr. Raisi's visit to Moscow showed that small differences won't get in the way of Tehran and Moscow's continued and close cooperation.
But for Iran, more important than an economic partnership with Russia is a military and intelligence alliance. And given relaxed sanctions, thanks to the JCPOA, whatever its state, Iran has become more intent yet on purchasing Russian military equipment, especially Sukhoi Su-35 fighter planes, an S-400 missile system, and military satellite. No deal has been signed publicly for that yet, though. But Russia and Iran both face a challenge, that is Iran's peaceful nuclear program. Russia has, like China, played a positive role in supporting Iran's rights with nuclear matters and lifting the embargo. But at the same time, it has convinced this country to continue negotiations on the basis of earlier talks. But without accepting all concessions made by the former Rouhani government, which was decisively more pro-West than the present administration. Regarding the recent Iran-Russia talks, Foreign Minister Amir Abdollahian said, "Today we are following up on more important agreements so that we can reach a good agreement in Vienna in a short period of time." In this regard, China's role alongside Russia is very important.
This triangular has already been created in the past couple of years, especially mainly, in the last 10 or 20 years, because China is the main consumer of Iranian oil. Russia count on Iran regarding Middle Eastern peace and stability, you see. So Iran is a great, player in these two countries' conclusion in international relationships. They cannot, isolate Iran. Neither Russia and China, nor European Union and also the United States are not able to isolate Iran.
Iran's new foreign policy approach is planned within a framework of balanced foreign policy and dynamic intelligent diplomacy and interaction, with a focus on three east-leaning priorities: a neighborly policy, an Asia-oriented policy, and an economy-oriented diplomacy.
Improving relations with our neighbors is the main priority of Mr. Raisi's foreign policy. You know, the first sign of just trying to release the pressure regarding sanctions was permanent membership of Iran in Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and it was a very good sign for Iran, because Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the most important seller and also buyer of energy in the world. You see, 42% of world population belongs to Shanghai Cooperation Organization.
Neighborly relations haven't been without a downside, and Iran yet has debts to collect. Thus far, Iran has been able to reach an agreement with Iraq on debt collection and resolve the debt problem with Turkmenistan and enter a new chapter of interactions with regional countries including Oman and Qatar and Kuwait. It has also re-entered cooperation with the UAE, as well as resuming talks with Saudi Arabia and taking it to a new level, as exemplified by Amir Abdollahian.
We are now a regional power. There are several trans-regional powers, including China, Russia, and the US. There are also some emerging powers, including India and Brazil. Iran has to balance its relations with them. Whenever the balance is disrupted, we'll suffer the consequences. It's interesting to note that we've seen these policies implemented by both the reformists and principalists. China's vote at the Security Council is very significant, and getting that vote could be very helpful.
Short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Plenty more to be said, but only after a quick news review on the third joint naval drill between Iran, Russia and China, and other matters. Here's how they worded it. The Financial Tribune points to the drill, the third drill between Iran, China and Russia, which was held in the northern Indian Ocean, Friday, January the 21st. The Iranian Navy and the naval forces of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps took part in the 2022 Marine Security Belt exercises over an area of 17,000 square kilometers. Rear Admiral Mostafa Tajuddini said this. He's the spokesman for the war games. The drills included various tactical exercises such as rescuing a burning vessel, releasing a hijacked vessel, and shooting at air targets at night. Strengthening the security of international maritime trade, combating piracy and maritime terrorism, exchanging intelligence in the field of maritime rescue missions, and exchanging operational and tactical experience are among the objectives of the exercise. The three countries started joint naval drills in 2019 in the Indian Ocean and the Sea of Oman area, Tajuddini said. Regarding closer ties with neighbors, Tehran Times has it, hopes rise for a new chapter in Iran-Turkey ties, quoting the Atlantic Council. In a commentary on January the 20th, the Atlantic Council said hopes have been raised for a new chapter in relations between Iran and Turkey, as Ebrahim Raisi has ascended to power, whose administration favors neighbors first policy. The commentary says the policy that President Raisi's administration is following is to reduce tensions between Iran and its most immediate neighboring countries, such as Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. On November the 15th, 2021, Turkey's Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu met Raisi and his Iranian counterpart Hossein Amir Abdollahian in Tehran, where they deliberated over economic relations, concerns over their shared border, and ongoing developments in the region. In a joint press conference with Amir Abdollahian, the Turkish Foreign Minister talked about the two countries' willingness to work on a roadmap for a long-term comprehensive cooperation upon Iran's proposal. To move just beyond the borders of present Iran and its 31 provinces, including Azerbaijan, to the Republic of Azerbaijan, Mehr News reads, Iran-Azerbaijan discuss prospects for military cooperation. Iranian Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani met and held talks with Azerbaijani Ambassador to Tehran Ali Alizadeh on the military cooperation. During the meeting, the sides emphasized Azerbaijani and Iranian presidents' special attention to bilateral relations and hailed the close ties between the two countries. They stressed the necessity of continuing cooperation between Azerbaijan and Iran in all fields, as friendly and close neighbors. They touched upon issues of cooperation in military and military technical fields. The two sides also had a broad exchange of views on prospects for strengthening fruitful cooperation, as well as the organization of reciprocal visits, enhancing the exchange of information and implementation of joint projects. That'll be it for the news section, but do stay tuned for the rest of the show. It was on March the 27th, 2021. Iran and China signed the 25-year Comprehensive Cooperation Agreement. It was when Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister, visited his then-Iranian counterpart, Javad Zarif, in Tehran. The agreement, which guarantees economic and cultural interaction between the two states, introduces Iran to the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative. That's the plan through which China aims to build a wide network of infrastructure projects from East Asia to Europe. It's worth trillions of dollars.
These long-term partnerships are quite helpful in nature, but it depends on how the two sides perceive it and how much understanding is there between them. When two nations have a strategic look towards their ties, they need a long-term plan, otherwise the strategic part wouldn't materialize. It's like a marriage. When two people make a deal to live with each other for a long time, they have to have a plan, the basis of which is how much they know each other.
As it is, even with US sanctions in place, China has been in a place of enough power and will to buy Iran's boycotted oil, even if by barter and at a third of its optimum price. But it has helped keep the Iranian economy afloat all the same. In December 2021, China reportedly shipped in 1.9 million barrels of Iranian oil. That's just under 260,500 tons. And by the 21st of January 2022, China had offloaded nearly 4 million barrels of Iranian crude oil into state reserve tanks.
The 25-year agreement with Iran shows that China considers Tehran a top player in regional equations, along with Saudi Arabia, the UAE and Egypt. This shows China attaches great importance to adjusting ties with Iran. We know that China buys a majority of its oil from the Persian Gulf region. Therefore, the region's security is paramount for Beijing. We know that Iran and Saudi Arabia play important roles in establishing security in the Persian Gulf. Then, the 25-year agreement shows the regional significance of Iran for China.
Iran made sure to make note of its new approach at the 67th United Nations General Assembly when its foreign minister got to talk to Western officials, say his German counterpart, Heiko Maas. He said, "The other signatories of the JCPOA must have flexibility and understand the new situation following the inauguration of the new Iranian administration. In other words, they must speed up the sanction lifting promised in the JCPOA, as Iran did its part of limiting its nuclear program till before the US binned the deal in 2018 and left Western European signatories gaping, helpless and despair."
There is no doubt that expanding relations with different countries can reduce the pressure that the United States puts on Iran and also help Iran to neutralize the sanctions imposed by the United States. Of course, we don't know how exactly these measures can cancel out the sanctions yet, but what's clear and we have experienced in the past is that expanding ties with emerging powers, especially China and Asian countries, helps Iran to reduce the effectiveness of the sanctions.
Regarding its Russia-Iran talks, Iran stressed the importance of expanding cooperation in the fields of science, society, culture and media for stable long-term relations. And the administration supports Russia's initiative of holding a meeting of speakers of parliaments of Iran, Russia, Turkey, Pakistan and China in the fight against terrorism. The fight against terrorism in the region, Iran and Russia have recognized as common ground they have covered. Now to go beyond, Iran prides itself as the winner at two fronts, in the battles against terrorism and the US maximum pressure campaign of sanctions. At the same time, this country has extensive economic potential in various areas such as agriculture, energy, industry and technology. This makes for beneficial bilateral and multilateral ties with any country, east or west.
Some Western countries are critical of this policy and advocate unilateralism. But the reality is that the world is changing. The international system is moving towards multilateralism and multipolarity. In that case, it's logical for us to move towards the different poles. But we emphasize balance in the relations. We need to ensure that the balance isn't tipped to a specific country, region, or bloc's favor. The balance must be maintained.
Leaning more east, India is among countries Iran has an eye for deepening relations with. Iran's location on the North-South corridor can make trade from India to Russia and Europe less expensive and more prosperous. As for neighboring or West Asian Muslim states, by mid-January, three Iranian diplomats arrived in Saudi Arabia to reopen Iran's representative office to the 57-member Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, in Jeddah.
Saudi Arabia has accepted that improving relations with the Israeli regime will not bring security to Persian Gulf. You know, they just improved and expanded their relationships with Israel under the Abraham Accord, which was the outcome of President Donald Trump's pressure on these two countries, I mean, United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. So they came to this conclusion that if they expand their relationships with Iran, which is the main player of the greater Middle East, they will gain much more security in the Persian Gulf and also the greater Middle East.
Ties were severed in early January 2016 by Saudi Arabia. That's when a number of angry protesters attacked the Saudi embassy in Tehran in answer to the Saudi execution of the prominent cleric Nimr al-Nimr. But since April 2021, the regional powers have engaged in four rounds of direct negotiations facilitated by Iraq, and a fifth round is underway. Another cause for contention between Iran and Saudi is the war in Yemen, as they have supported opposing sides. Mojtaba Zonnouri, member of Iran's National Security Parliamentary Committee, has confirmed that a new chapter is opening in Iran-Saudi Arabia relations, and talks have been held on the conservation, furnishing and equipping and reopening the Iranian and Saudi embassies in one another's territories.
Iran and Saudi Arabia are two important powers in West Asia and have significant common interests in the region. For example, security in the Persian Gulf would not be sustainable without the cooperation of Iran and Saudi Arabia. As in the 1970s, Nixon's policy was based on U.S. cooperation with Iran and Saudi Arabia to establish security in the Persian Gulf. In addition, the conflicting interests and rivalry between Iran and Saudi Arabia have cost countries like Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen. This logic over the past few years has made Iran and Saudi Arabia try to reduce the intensity of their rivalry and tensions.
During his visit to the State Duma of Russia, President Raisi made a speech that hints at the goal of Iran's foreign policy in general. It certainly doesn't believe in the U.S. strategy of hegemony and occupation, as that has ended in failure, looking at America as having had to flee Iraq and Afghanistan, as he put it. Pointing that America is currently in its weakest state, Raisi said, to summarize his words, "Today, strengthening Iran-Russia relations in bilateral and multilateral forms will boost the economies of the two nations and strengthen regional and international security. The purpose and basis of this cooperation and interaction is the mutual interests of nations and the increasing formation of a civilized global community." That'll be it for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do join us again at the same times next week and each week after, as you never know what's on. Bye for now.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
National Zoo in Washington is now home to a new quill-covered resident, the second offspring of a porcupine family. Zoo staff reported the birth of the porcupine pet earlier this month during a snowstorm. They say they are awaiting a DNA analysis to reveal more information about the baby porcupine. Its brother is now 4 years old. The two siblings are the fourth generation of this family to live in the zoo's mammal house. These animals are born with the ability to climb and look almost identical until they are 6 months old. Natives of South America, these creatures are one of the 18 porcupine species that exist in the world today. The most powerful telescope ever built in the world is now at its final destination in space. After traveling for nearly 1 month, NASA's James Webb Space Telescope has reached its final parking spot in space, which is approximately 1 million miles away from Earth. The mission of the tennis court-sized telescope is to explore the cosmos and better understand the early days of the universe. The $10 billion telescope will also carefully monitor faraway exoplanets and study the atmospheres of planets outside our solar system. It's more advanced than NASA's iconic Hubble telescope. Now with the Chinese New Year approaching, a Vietnamese artist is honoring the zodiac sign of 2022 by making different objects that look like tigers.
I often introduce collections for the zodiac animal of the next year. It's going to be the year of the tiger soon. There are 2022 carvings in this collection, which align with the number of this year. Also, I am very fond of tigers as an animal, as they are so powerful, yet so majestic.
Tam Pat has his workshop in a village on the outskirts of the capital, Hanoi. The 39-year-old artist makes tigers using wood from jackfruit trees, which Vietnamese often use to make spiritual items. He applies crushed eggshells and seashells to give shape to the tiger's stripes. The artist is also carving some tigers purely out of laterite, the mineral still used in some villages to build homes. It takes Tam Pat about 2 weeks to come up with a tiger-looking object. This year, he is trying to make his creations in a way that can be used in everyday life. The house in Colombia has become a hotspot for tourists. It's built in a unique way, and if you want to enter the house, you have to first walk on the ceiling leading to the door. The upside-down house is named Casa Loca and is located in Guatavita, a short distance from the capital, Bogota. Tourists can be seen walking around taking pictures of this exceptional structure. Many say it fills them with joy to visit such places. Some tourists say this has provided them a chance to gain some relief from the struggles of the pandemic.
We've come from a pandemic. We've emerged from a lockdown. So this helps people have a moment of relaxation with the novelty that we did not have. You have fun while snapping photos. It puts your mind at ease.
The Austrian creator of Casa Loca says he first got the idea to build a house when he was visiting a similar place in his country back in 2015. He says his grandchildren were stunned by the creation, and that's why he decided to make an upside-down house in Colombia, where he lives now. He says people initially thought he was mad, but he decided to accomplish his plan anyway. The pandemic slowed him down a bit, but he proudly inaugurated the place 3 weeks ago.
Iran has won the first title in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championship. Saman Kujuri has more.
Talented Iranian children have ranked first in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships, which was held online. Children in five different age groups, including age 5 to 7 as Group A, 8 to 9 Group B, 10 to 11 Group C, 12 to 14 Group D, and 15 or older in Group E, annually attend the contest solving multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, cube root, fractions, time, and etc. 572 students from 21 member states participated at the event.
This year, Iranian students have won the title of Champion of the Champions in two categories. Moreover, they won titles in all categories, including Champion of Champions titles, Champion titles, First Winners, and the Second Winner titles. In 2023, Iran will host the 22nd edition of the Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships.
The Smart Kids Institute holds a national competition annually in August to select members of the Iranian team for attending the PALMA Global Abacus Championships. Children from 17 to 13 years of age take part in the competition to solve some 7 mathematical test sheets using abacuses.
I am 12 years old. I have won the first title in this round of the international competitions. I have been practicing with abacus for 4 years. In the competitions, we had to solve multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, and etc.
My math teacher encouraged me to learn abacus 5 years ago.
abacus and mental arithmetic skills had great impact on my mental growth and helped me a lot in my math lessons.
The championship, organized by a non-profit organization established in 1999, is an example of what can be achieved with early intervention in abacus math and mental arithmetic education.
The purpose of the competition is to allow for observation of mental arithmetic skills from countries around the world and to promote related education to find new talents in this field. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get the chance. However, the Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zora Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months, traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zora is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a microlight aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumptions. That's absolutely amazing. Let's take a listen.
The plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is. But I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes for the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zora says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zora had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now, Zora says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be? In the world of art, a Japanese artist named Sachi is creating incredibly realistic felted wool portraits of cats. Sachi calls her artworks Wakuneko, which directly translates to frame cat. Her work is highly popular, and she has more than 600,000 followers on different social media platforms. Each portrait takes a whopping 1 month to complete. The crafting process starts with Sachi looking at dozens of photos of the cat she wants to replicate. Then she prepares the required materials before preparing the foundation and mounts the felt onto it. The most difficult part of the job is making the subject's eyes. According to Sachi, it is also the most special stage.
I think that the moment when the cat's spirit enters into the artwork can be presented through the eyes. In that sense, I have been very particular about how to make the eyes.
Sachi's portraits have inspired people around the world to adopt homeless cats. Now she hopes to hold an exhibition showing various cats, including ones with physical handicaps, in order to inspire more adoptions of shelter cats.
Disability is not an obstacle to success. A group of Japanese with disabilities has proved it as they create incredible handicraft and make a living this way. A shop called Amayaka offers the items made by these disabled individuals. Located in a Tokyo neighborhood, it showcases products ranging from scarves and bags to glassware and colorful cards. Mallorca, and all other workshops are part of a new movement aimed at promoting works of people with impairment. In just one of the workshops cooperating with Mallorca, about 20 disabled people are working over there. However, organizers of the movement say these people are still invisible in the society and are not paid fairly for their works despite being experienced in craftsmanship.
Some workers here have a career of more than 30 years. They have been weaving since their school days. They are so experienced that we should refer to them as artisans.
The organizers say they hope that their initiative will promote the works of the people with disabilities and help the society to start thinking about the way disabled workers are being treated. The Indian-administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office, a 200-year-old houseboat on a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar. Set up during the British rule in India, the post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt has more.
The Indian-administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir disallowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time, as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mails, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to 2 centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
IRIB English Radio.